From Storyflow, this is your daily audio brief for June 20th. Riley, June 20th. The morning read, 10 stories, balanced sourcing throughout. Let's get into it. First, from Heather Delaney Reese. Trump says, there are no limits to his power in a shocking new interview. This is the audio version of my written post from 6/18/2026, which can be found here. This commentary represents my personal opinions and analysis of matters of public concern, informed by publicly available information. Next, second, from Heather Delaney Reese. Trump says, there are no limits to his power in a shocking new interview. Sitting in the White House after a long night of travel from the G7 summit, a visibly worn-down president of the United States was asked a simple question. What had he learned about the limits of his power? His answer came immediately. There are no limits. When the reporter looked surprised, Trump went on. No, none. I haven't learned that lesson yet. I know there are, but you know there are no limits. And that contradiction, certainty followed instantly by reversal, ran through the entire interview. Up next. Third, from The Guardian US. Wyndham Clark carries four-shot U.S. Open lead as big names gather in chasing pack. Americans' revival continues after controversy 12 months ago. Rory McIlroy still in contention despite bit of a battle on back nine. Everyone was chasing one man on a windswept Friday in the Hamptons as Wyndham Clark continued his extraordinary revival, posting the lowest 36-hole score ever recorded in a U.S. Open at Shinnecock and carrying a four-shot lead into the weekend. The 2023 champion backed up his opening round 64 with a 1-under-69 to reach 7-under-par, breaking the previous halfway record of 6-under-set by Phil Mickelson and Shigeki Maruyama in 2004. Clark's total left him 4 strokes clear of Matt Fitzpatrick, Xander Schauffele, Sam Stevens, and Tom Kim at 3-under, while Colin Morikawa hurled himself into contention with the day's low score of 65 to sit alone at 2-under on a sun-splashed but blustery afternoon in Southampton. Continue reading. And then. Fourth, from The Guardian US. World Cup defeat offers new U.S. friends a quick lesson and tour of the Scottish psyche. Yes, there's the party side, the buoyant side, one that makes friends everywhere it goes, but there's the other side, too. In a disconcerting development, Americans have started wearing kilts. Some of them are even doing it on the TV as they try to wrap themselves around the tartan army. On the local Boston News on Thursday night, things were so giddy that people were predicting victory over Morocco and a passage out of the group for the first time. It was only when the camera returned to the news anchor that she reminded everyone, actually, Morocco are African champions and World Cup semi-finalists. The U.S. has a bit to learn about football still, and maybe more to understand about the Scots. Yes, there's the party side, the buoyant side, the one that makes friends everywhere it goes, but there's the other side too, the skeptical one. Some call it realist, the one that knows you should party now because things will find a way of going wrong in a minute, the one that spies a challenge like Morocco with foreboding. Continue reading. Next. Fifth, from The Counter Signal. Premier Smith says potential coal not water referendum, not until 2027. Author, Alex Dhaliwal. On Wednesday, Premier Danielle Smith said Corb Lund's Water Not Coal petition won't appear on the Octane 19 ballot because Elections Alberta required all referendum questions by June 1st. The petition can still proceed, but the earliest it could go to a provincial referendum is October 2027, she told reporters at an unrelated press conference. Water Not Coal organizers say they've collected more than 200,000 signatures for a petition opposing new coal mines in Alberta's eastern slopes, as reported by Global News. The petition specifically targets 2 proposed coal projects. Up next. Sixth, from Politico, the UK's World Cup diplomatic mullet. While Boston and Dallas have been taken over by marauding Scotland and England fans, Washington, D.C., this week welcomed a slightly more sedate British crowd at Duke's Grocery, a trendy restaurant and bar in Washington's West End neighborhood. Call it the UK's diplomatic mullet, business in the front, party in the back. More than 100 England fans crowded some 10 television sets inside the bar on Wednesday, invited by the UK embassy to mark their team's first game of the World Cup against Croatia. Flags for every participant hung down from the ceiling. And then, 7th, from Politico. In Canberra, disappointment. Canberra, it was disappointment from start to finish around the US vs Australia match in the Bush capital, won comfortably by the American side. Neither of Canberra's Socceroos made the starting lineup, and the local government failed to provide an outdoor watch site for the match, despite a heavy social media campaign from locals. Next, 8th, from Politico. Wealth correlation with soccer ability? Politico has been crunching the numbers to see how all 48 of this year's World Cup participants rank in several other off-field categories, which we'll share more of over the weekend. In today's item, we look at whether GDP per capita has any connection to soccer performance. As you can see, the chart does show some positive correlation. Note, for example, wealthy tournament contenders such as France, the Netherlands, and Germany all in the upper right corner. But it's not a perfect indicator. Up next, 9th, from Politico. The Brazil-Haiti match that changed the world. Brazil has won a record 5 World Cups, but the most important match it has ever played may have been an exhibition match against Haiti that was meaningless in sporting terms, but has had a long influence on each country's politics. On August 18, 2004, Brazil's players drove through the streets of Port-au-Prince in armored personnel carriers, World Cup champions greeted like liberators. And then, 10th, from Politico, Lurie seeing red, white, and blue. Daniel Lurie is already imagining the scene at Levi's Stadium on July 1st. The San Francisco Democrat, who, according to at least one recent poll, is the most popular mayor in America, was circulating around his city ahead of Levi's Stadium hosting Turkey versus Paraguay tonight when he began to wrap his head around his good fortune. The venue is scheduled to host the round of 32 match featuring the Group D winner on July 1st, and that's very likely to be the U.S. team. "It'll be incredible," Lurie, a no-nonsense technocrat, told Politico. "That's the day. Back at the desk tomorrow. What to watch is in your subscribe link."